Hi, everybody. It's Wes Durham, and welcome to a special edition on the Atlanta Falcons Podcast Network. Great to be with my partner, Dave Archer, and look who's here. Number two, Matt Ryan, joins us for this special edition. We're going to have a conversation here.
Okay.
And since we can't start for when the earth cooled, Arch, let's start with, April 26, 2008.
Hey, that was a good day. That was
Radio City Music Hall, New York City.
Yeah.
Did you think you were going to be the third pick?
So I kind of had a feeling. My agent, Tom Condon, these guys are all kind of clued into what's going on. And I remember being up there in New York, which was – it was really cool at the time. The draft is much different now than it was then when I was drafted. But there were six of us up there. In New York for the week, getting ready for it. And so, like, maybe Thursday or Friday, Tom Condon said to me, he said, I really don't think you'll go past third. He said, I think that the Falcons are going to take you at three if they're there. St. Louis was picking two at the time.
Yep.
Miami took Jake Long one. And he said, the only thing I think that could happen is Baltimore could trade to two to take you. And so I was kind of like, all right, I don't really know. And looking back on it, he probably didn't know anything either. He was probably just telling me that and make me feel good. I don't know how much validity there is to it. But, you know, you're still nervous. Even when three comes along, you know, you're not really sure, you know, what's going to happen. Then you get the phone call and bam, you know, next thing I knew, I was in, you know, here at Flowery Branch late that night, and it was a whirlwind. But it was a crazy experience, really, really cool experience. And you know, part of me wishes the draft was always still there for those guys at New York City at Radio City Music Hall, because it's such a iconic venue and special place. But it was a whirlwind. It was a crazy start.
How much did you know about the Falcons, or how much did you follow it? Obviously, you were a fan of the National Football League, but Atlanta in particular, maybe even Baltimore. Had you looked at those places and kind of studied them a little bit?
I mean, studied a little, but yeah. Like, you don't know. Like, I knew the football teams. I knew the coaching staffs from having met, you know, with them during that draft process. But there's so much more to it when you get here. You know what I mean? That you have no idea about the history of the organization, the guys who have played. You get to meet all those guys. You know, so I would say it was limited, you know, what I really knew about the organization. And then, you know, city-wise, I'd been to Atlanta twice in my life, right? I was here once when I was recruited by Georgia Tech. I came down for a visit with my dad. And then the second time was when I played Georgia
well
Tech.
Aware. Yeah, well aware.
Which, yeah, that was it was a good night for me, not so much for Wes. But
threw in a Coke bottle all night long. Yeah, threw for like 427 or something.
You'd know better than I. We threw for a lot. But so those were my, you know, kind of two visits to Atlanta. I honestly grew up hating Atlanta because I was a Phillies fan, and the Braves basically dominated the Phillies, you know, my entire existence. So I didn't know a ton, if I'm being completely honest, when I got down here. And, you know, I haven't looked back since, though.
All right, there was a legend that you had texted your mom after the game at Georgia Tech in September of 07.
Yeah.
Saying, I really like this city. I think I could see myself living here.
I said it to my – I wouldn't have texted my mom because my mom
– But did you say it or whatever the story is?
My mom was not
– A text.
You're not correct. You
Burn
were picking
not
up
into
the
text.
Burn is not into – text. Well, she's gotten better. She's gotten better. But at that time, there was no chance.
Yeah.
But I do remember I think she might have been at the game or something like that. And so afterwards, waiting for the bus – And you know it, Georgia Tech Stadium is so awesome.
Yeah,
right?
You're at down night there, especially.
At night game down there, you've got the skyline in the background. We had this unbelievable night.
Yeah.
I remember we stayed at the Westin in Buckhead, which was like the nicest hotel we ever stayed at Boston College. And I'm like, this place is unbelievable, right? And so I remember saying to my mom, I'm like, I really like this city. It's you know, obviously we had a good experience on the football field, but it was a beautiful September night.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't have dialed up a better time of the year. So I recall saying something of that. My mom certainly, you know, recalls me saying
that. Yeah, Tenuta couldn't hold up the blitz all night long. He blitzed all night.
Three fires
back end couldn't hold up. Ryan threw for a billion yards and BC one
going away. Well, I remember he made a few plays out of the pocket, too, which I don't think people weren't giving him credit for.
Sneaky athleticism.
By the way, side note, Rich McKay was at the game that night.
Was he?
Comes upstairs, and I'm still doing Georgia Tech, obviously. Yeah. Comes in the radio booth, tells me, hey, I'm going down. I got to watch the Ryan kid warm up. And I'm like, okay, we'll see you at halftime. He goes, I'll be gone by halftime. So
he missed a show.
He did miss a show. We saw a show in the first half.
I guess the warm-up must have been pretty good, too, then.
Yeah, the warm-up must have been really nice.
Usually when you warm up really well, you don't play
That's what I was going to say. Usually my bad warm-ups were the best performances. The good warm-ups, you'd go into that locker room and be like, oh, God, this is not going to be good.
I can concur with that. Yeah. Matt, you signed really quickly for a number one draft pick, especially – in that era when the monies were still negotiable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did that happen?
Well, number one, you know, looking back, it's so different. It was so different then than it is now, right? Yeah. Like the changes in kind of slotting the draft and what guys are going to be paid and kind of that whole thing has changed. And so going back to it, the narrative was that quarterbacks are going to be holdouts because there's going to be this back and forth in negotiations. And I think I have to give credit to both sides, right? I think both sides felt like, hey, we don't want that. You know, with all that had gone on here in Atlanta prior to me getting here, I think it was, let's get this done. Let's figure out what works. You know, and let's not have any distractions heading into training camp. And that was certainly what I wanted, you know, from my end too, was to, you know, I was 22 when I got drafted. Yeah. Like, all of it sounds good to me, right? all of it. I don't know anything about this negotiating, but like the first offer sounds great. So it was all exciting. It was all good. And I wanted to get it done and really, you know, much like the rest of my career, not really have those things be a distraction ever. And I was lucky, you know, that it never really was. Contracts were never – I'm so fortunate to, you know, have had the contracts that I had, but both sides had to be a part of it, and it was always great dealing, you know, with the organization.
You came in here, obviously, at a very volatile time. You knew that. You were well aware of the scenario. You were involved in a quarterback competition. That went all the way through the preseason up until, like, 10 days before the start of the regular season, as I recall. But yet you kind of came in here and melted into the team chemistry pretty well for a rookie. Dave and I've always talked about your ability to come in here and adjust and be quickly integrated into the professional rank. I thought was one of your biggest traits, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I grew up playing team sports, and I think, you know, while it's different at the professional level, when you've been on teams your whole life, you understand what it is to be a teammate. And you know, you've got to be one of the guys. And, you know, you understand that whatever role it is that you're asked to do, you got to play your role well. And I, you know, I was always comfortable, you know, with that. And even at a young age, kind of comfortable in my own skin, just being who I was. And I think that's the key. I mean, Arch, you can speak to it, being in the locker room for a long time. You know, when guys are trying to be something that they're not, it doesn't usually work out that well. And so I think you just have to be yourself, and that's what I tried to be. Listen, you know, look at the guys who are doing it the right way. Like, I think back to that locker room I walked into in 2008. Todd McClure, I mean, Falcons Ring of Honor guy, but maybe the best person on the planet. I mean, just a good, good human being, the ultimate guy to learn from. You know, Roddy White, energy for days. Right. And I mean, just starting to scratch the surface of who he was as a player. But I mean, competitor and like not scared of anything. You see that. Then you see, you know, John Abraham on the other side. He does it a completely different way, but knows how to produce, you know, week in and week out. You got Keith Brooking, who was here my rookie year. Brooke was, you know, 10 plus years in the NFL. He was kind of, you know, one of the faces of this organization for the better part of a decade. Wide receiver room, too. You have Brian Finneran, old. Mm-hmm. I love Finn. He was old to me at the time, now that, you know.
Yeah. I like you saying old. Let's go old, man. It's old.
You know, but him kind of, you know, teaching me the ropes. Michael Jenkins, a really mature, you know, fourth or fifth year guy in that stage. There were so many good examples of what it looked like to be a professional around me. So, it was easy for me to say, okay, I've got these examples. I can lean on them for advice in different situations. And then also, like, I'm here to be the guy, mm-hmm. you know, and not shying away from that from the start. Like, yeah. I respect that you guys are in these spots in your career, but we all know playing on football teams, they're looking to you. And I was confident myself, probably, you know, naively so, but felt confident in my ability and felt confident in the way that I interacted with my teammates.
So let's buy a sound system for the locker room.
Oh, yeah.
Walk us through the legend that is Matt Ryan's sound system for the offensive line.
It's still in there.
Which,
with all the changes to this building, the fact that that sound system is still in there, I am very proud of. It was built to last.
Yeah.
And it cost enough to last. It should have lasted. But so I remember it was OTAs or something like that. It was sometime before we broke for that 4 or 5 weeks you get off before training camp. And I walked into the locker room and I was sitting at my locker, which you guys know in that old locker room, I was right on that, mm-hmm. you know, where you walk in past the equipment room. And so I'm sitting there, it's probably like 6:15 in the morning and it's dead silent in there. And Lawyer Malloy.
Oh, the law dog.
Walks right past me and he's like, hey, you hear that? And I'm like, no, like, hear what? He's like, exactly. He's like, this place needs a sound system. And I was like, oh, okay. Didn't think anything of it, whatever. And so then, like, the whole day I'm kind of thinking about it. I'm like, I think he's telling me to buy a sound system. Like, I think that's what he was saying. So I kept my mouth shut, and we break after minicamp, and we've got that that stretch of time off, and I go to Brian Boigner, who's head equipment manager, and I said, Boigs, like, what do we got to do to get a sound system? Can we get it done in the 4 or 5 weeks, you know, while we're off? And he said, yeah, we can probably do that. And so I give credit to Boigs. I mean, yes, I paid for it, but Boigs actually did the work and you know, got whatever set up to get it done. So we come back for training camp and I come in like a day or two early and I'm like, can I hear it? And they like turn it on. I'm like, all right, perfect. This is good. It's a good sound system. And so I'm sitting there at my locker. I'll never forget it. I'm sitting there at my locker just waiting for Lawyer Malloy to walk in. I cannot wait for him to walk in.
Yeah.
And he does. And I've got the whole equipment room keyed up to kind of turn it on as soon as he comes in. And they fire it up and the bass is pumping and we've got music blaring. And he just looks at me and he's like, well done. Well done. So it was a cool thing. But I mean, you know, it's changed a lot in the NFL, but I think some of that old school, I wouldn't even say that was hazing. There was more of that, like, that went on. But that old school, like, you've got to earn your stripes. You got to do some of those things. I always liked that kind of stuff. I loved being able to do it in the position, you know, being in the position to be able to do it.
Yeah.
No question about it.
We get to your rookie season.
Yeah, let's talk some football.
All right.
Talk some football.
Yeah,
I'm
ready. Do you remember the first pass of your senior year at Boston College?
Yeah, pick six. Wake Forest.
Antoine Smith.
Yes, correct. And I'll never forget. So the day before, Friday before, Steve Logan was offensive coordinator, who was awesome. And I'll never forget, he sat me down after our walkthrough on Friday, and he was like, hey, man, you're the best player in the country. And he goes, if I have to throw the ball 80 times tomorrow, we're going to throw it 80 times. He's like, I have so much faith in what you're doing or whatever.
Hmm.
And I then start off with a pick six on the first throw. And I remember coming to the sideline and he goes, you got 79 more to go. And I was like, perfect. Yeah. Let's go.
Oh,
let it rip.
Built
you know?
Confidence.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, and little stuff like that as a player is stuff that you'll never forget. And so – yeah, I remember throwing that pick six, and then I remember throwing for like 450 and
that's
four
exactly
or five touchdowns
right.
afterwards.
Yeah.
So
my question is this. Given that, the scope of first pass of your senior year to the first pass of your rookie year.
Yeah.
Today at the Georgia Dome, the Atlanta Falcons start their 44th season in the NFL fresh and new. A new rookie quarterback in Matt Ryan and a new head coach in Mike Smith. Ryan going to throw first professional pass, caught, Jenkins, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, he lives in Atlanta, his first professional pass is a 62-yard strike to Michael Jenkins.
That's the way you throw your first pass in the game. That's how you do it.
So, Matt, I mean, it sends chills down my back. I would assume it does you.
Yeah.
So take me through it.
Yeah. So on this, we talk about the pick six that I threw to start. So on Friday afternoons, my rookie year, I would meet with Mike Mularkey after practice, and we would talk through the first 15 plays. And I was like, Mike, you know, first pass, I'd love to just get something I could get a completion on, right? Like, give me a flat route or anything. And so we had this play up. It was, I think we called it zero strong 62 comet sink. And so he was like, I've scouted Detroit on, you know, first and 10, first made first downs, which I think that was, right? Mm-hmm. Was we ran the ball twice. We earned a first down. It was a first earned first down. So Mike had, you know, the numbers out. And he's like, they're, you know, 97% cover six, which is quarters to the field and it's half into the boundary. So we have this curl flat concept that's beat, you know, designed to beat quarters on the front side. He said, I'm going to give you curl flat to the field. You've run it since you were in eighth grade, right? You can't, like, I can't give you anything easier than this. I'm like, all right, that's perfect. He goes, but like, the only other thing they play is kind of this cover three that they rotate too late out of that look. And if we do that, he's like, just alert the skinny post backside. If you throw an incompletion, don't worry about it. You know, because skinny post, like, not the easiest throw to come out of the gate. And I remember being under center and being like, oh, they're rotating down. Like, I think I got to throw this skinny post. And sure enough, they did. I trusted what I saw, and that ball came out of my hand, and I mean, it hit Jenk, you know, right in stride. And I remember running and celebrating, and then being honest with you, on that clip, sitting on the bench, being exhausted from the celebration because I'm screaming, I'm running around, I don't know what I'm doing, but it was crazy. It really was. And, you know, what gets lost in that, though, is I think we only threw the ball 13 times after that. We were like 11 of 14 in that game for a win.
Well, because Michael Turner ran for 6 miles.
That's correct. Yeah. Times have changed.
Set the franchise record rushing that day. I think over 220 yards rushing. And you did only throw it 13 times in the game.
Yeah.
But 62,700 yards later, here we are sitting. And it's unbelievable to think about that. So, from a rookie standpoint, so you go from that high where you guys blow out Detroit in that first game to the next week you go to Tampa and they flat get after you in
Tampa. I think I was like 3 of 17 or something in the first half. Those numbers may not be correct, but it's not far off, right? And I'll never forget going back, circling back to Lawyer Malloy, you know, on the sideline. I mean, he is in my face, and he's saying, hey, man, in this league – you can't be that guy last week and this guy this week. And I'll never forget hearing that and being like, God, I got to get it together. The thing I remember about that game, though, was we came storming back in the second half. We gave ourselves a chance in that game. And him coming up to me in the locker room after the game, we lost, but he said, okay, you showed me something. And to me, I was like, okay, like I've always known that was me. Like, I'm not gonna back down. I'm gonna keep throwing it, regardless of what's gonna happen. But the validation from a guy who had been a world champion, who had, you know, done those things, that meant a lot to me at that time.
I think it's one of the things Arch and I always talk about in your career. It felt like you found guys, and I know Dave sometimes drew the analogy of when he got to Atlanta and started professional football. You find those connective guys. Sounds like Lawyer Malloy, Todd McClure, they could have been those guys for you in some respect.
Oh, no doubt. You know, and Lawyer, just in a small way. I mean, he was here a short time while I was here. But, you know, you talk about a guy like Todd McClure. I mean, I was lucky. I played with two centers for basically 10 years of my career that were unbelievable in Todd and Alex Mack. And how much those guys take off your plate at the line of scrimmage, both in the run game and in the pass game, it was it helped me so much. But Todd specifically in that first 5 years of my career, you know, like, I didn't really have to do much at the line. And he was rarely wrong, you know, and it wasn't probably until my second or third year that I would say, hey, Todd, maybe, you know, I could get to that point. But it allowed me to develop, you know, slowly. But you know, there were guys like you mentioned, you know, Todd McClure. But then, you know, my second year, you talk about Tony Gonzalez coming in. You know, we trade and Tony comes in. And for me, it's like, wow, I get to see what first ballot Hall of Fame looks like every day. And I get to pick his brain and you know, talk to him about different things. I think we're all byproducts of the people, you know, that we're surrounded
sure.
by. And so I was incredibly fortunate to walk into that offense in 2008 that had Michael Turner, Roddy White, really tough offensive line. You know, Michael Jenkins on the backside at RX, drafted with Harry Douglas, who was a hell of a player here for a long mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of really good pieces, you know, a lot of really good pieces, and a coaching staff, you know, that taught me how to be a professional.
Well, yeah, and it's fine to have guys around, but, and this is his most, I had a chance to talk to this guy three times a week.
Exactly.
Every week. He got tired of seeing me. No. Oh, my God. Here he comes again. He's going to ask me. But the quarterback has to be the most competitive guy on your team, which he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has to be the glue guy that can draw the competitiveness out of guys that might be not timid, but a little bit less than what Lawyer Malloy were. And,
sure.
And that was something you were able to pull out of players.
The game-winning drives thing, the nickname, Matty Ice and all stuff, and I know that kind of was born in college, but take us into, if you can, the mindset. You had four game-winning drives your rookie year. I mean, the play against Chicago where they get the short kick and you find Jink on the bench route
yeah.
to set up a game-winning field. Take me through the mindset there of what you need to do to make sure the other 10 guys are locked in to go find a win-win.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me, it was always you just have to do your job really well mm-hmm. in these situations. And it was never like a hero play or anything like that. It was just, you know, in every situation's different. You mentioned that Chicago play. So I remember coming from the sideline and we were saying basically, we're going to try and run this bench route. I think we had like 6 seconds. I can't remember exactly what we had, but I think, it wasn't much. It wasn't much. Yeah. And so it was like 5 or 6 seconds. And really the coaching point was, hey, if we get cover two, which I was shocked, you know, and you see defenses now, you wouldn't see this. They defend the sideline, right? Mm-hmm. The defenses are different. But they were like, if we get cover two, try and hold that cloud corner, so the corner who's sitting there, onto the flat route and rip that bench. If we get anything else, you're going to have to throw it away and we're going to try and throw something up at the end of the game, like a desperation type play. Mm-hmm. So in my mindset, I'm out there, I'm saying, all right, guys, this is exactly what we're going to do. If we get cover two, I'm going to rip this bench tee on the sideline, get your feet down. In enough time, we're going to kick the field goal and we're going to win. If not, I'm going to throw the ball away immediately and we're going to go to our end of game desperation play. So to me, it was always just, it was very black and white. You know what I mean? It was, I'm going to do this, you know, and we're going to do this. Here's exactly, and that's really the way I would talk in the huddle is, here's exactly what we're going to do. If we get this, you're going to catch us on the sideline. We're going to do it. We're going to kick this and then we're going to go win. And I was always shocked that it actually happened. You know, like they come out, they play that cover two. We have like a free run or two at my legs, and I put that thing on the sideline. Jenk makes a great catch, and Jason Elam goes out there and knocks it through the pipes, and we get the win. But I thought it was the preparation. So it's a roundabout way to get to – I thought it was about us being prepared for those situations and being comfortable because of our preparation. So we knew what we were going to do. Here's our plan. Let's go execute it and not be scared of the moment. And I was surrounded by guys that weren't scared of the moment either, right? They were not scared to be in critical situations and to make the play.
It's critical, though, that you know that the guy with the ball in his hands is not scared of
the moment.
So those guys are maybe not scared of the moment, but they are if he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so your ability to demonstrate an ability to just immerse yourself in the situation right then and not look at the ramifications, not a lot of people can go there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think as a quarterback, you're a bit of a salesman every play. You know what I mean? Every play call that comes in, the way you call it, the way you talk, you know, the way you get your guys to the line of scrimmage, you got to be selling that this is what we're doing. You got to sell it during the week. Here's why we're doing it. Here's, you know, and your coaching staff has a lot to do with that. But the way that you think about it, right, And the way that you portray it, I think, comes across. I think body language comes across, you know, to your teammates. And then I think the way you handle things when it doesn't go well, right? That, yeah, we didn't win it, but we're going to win it the next time we get it. I truly believe that, you know. I think that over time, you know, your teammates, you know, start to learn that about you, and it makes a difference. And it was something that, you know, honestly, I grew up chasing my older brother, right? Like, he was 4 years older than me, played all the same sports as me, and it was, I was just constantly chasing him. And so there was a lot of losing, you know?
Yep.
But if you were going to play with these older kids and you were going to do all of this stuff, you were going to take your lumps, but you better get right back up, get back in their face and show that you weren't going to, you know, you weren't going to back down. And I think I learned that from a young age, and I don't think it ever went away.
I kept looking at moments during your career, you know, the touchdown pass, your first play, and then trying to gather yourself emotionally to get back in the game to go win a football game, getting thumped in week two, the, you know, game-winning drives that you began to become legendary for. I think there were 46 of them, which is, by the way, sixth all-time in comeback wins in NFL history, which begins to add up as we get through this career of what he's done, and there should be a gold jacket in the closet at some point here for this guy. But the next bridge was, and I don't think you – I didn't know it.
Yeah.
Was that the franchise had never had back-to-back winning seasons, and you go to the playoffs your rookie year, lose in Arizona, but took the team to the playoffs. Here you come back in 09, and they start talking about back-to-back winning season.
I know. I was like, what? You know, like, how can that be? And it was something. And so we go through that year, that second year, and we're a good football team. You know, we were a good football team, kind of right. We were in the mix. And I got hurt against Tampa. I had turf toe, so I tore the ligaments in my toe. And I think I missed parts of three games. And we went 0-2 while I was out.
Right.
You know, I think we lost to the Eagles and the Saints. I can't remember exactly, I think that's who we lost to. And it kind of eliminated us from playoff contention, but I remember there was that last three-game stretch, and so in order to finish 9-7, we had to win all three with little or nothing to play for, as you would see it from the outside perspective. And I came back, and I remember we beat Buffalo, we beat the Jets, and we beat Tampa to finish off that season. And Mr. Blank, I remember, you know, his excitement, you know, and I know it doesn't sound like the, you know, sexiest thing of all time to have just had, you know, your back-to-back winning seasons for the first time. But for him taking over the organization, I do think it was something he was very proud of trying to get this going in the right direction, right? Mm-hmm. To create sustained success. And so that was a big deal, you know, for Mr. Blank. Maybe not so much for the rest of the players, you know, because we weren't a part of the, you know, 40 some years of history up until that point. Mm-hmm. But for him, it was. And I'll never forget that.
Well, and it also became that moment for me as a former player here, and part of the problem why we didn't have
stop
was there's a new mark. There's a new benchmark that this organization is supposed to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And so Matt was a part of that with all his teammates he's talking about, but the ability to take this to another level where their expectation level is not just winning seasons, it's going to the playoffs, which in 2010, we got that rectified.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, when we started kind of piecing all this together, I mean, without going Ralph Edwards, this is your life the whole way through. I mean, the next line seems to be like 2012. Here you are. You've been to the playoffs a couple times. It hadn't produced, but to win in the postseason.
Yeah, we were 0-3 at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you get to 2012, and then all of a sudden, here's this Seattle game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a real thing.
Yep.
I mean, this is like – and yet all the things that had happened really since 08 and the building and adding Tony and going through free agency and the cosmetic change any team goes through in the National Football League – You get to 2012, and things just start out gangbusters in this game. And then here's Seattle making this comeback, and they take the lead late. And the next play we're going to run in this is a play that you guys have come from deep in your own territory late, and then you make this throw.
19 seconds left. Ryan in the gun. Takes a snap. Seattle bringing pressure. Matt's going to throw. Gonzalez the catch. 35. Tony tackled 31-yard line. Timeout, Mike Smith.
Yeah.
Come on.
I love it. So this is gun trips right, deep 68 shell.
And not
so
that you remember.
No. I mean, Tony probably had 70 catches on this, you know, during his time with us. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but he had a lot of catches, you know, on this play. The thing I love about that clip, though, is you talk about it taking all 11. And Jacquizz Rodgers blocked.
Yep.
You know, coming from the backside. There's pressure coming from the right. He's got a scan, coast to coast, we used to call it. Starting looking on the left to make sure no backers are coming from the left, and then scanning and coming back to the right and coming across in front of my face, you know, and stoning the backer who's coming from the right side, giving me just enough time for, you know, me to push the ball down the field to get to Tony. But, you know, that was a big deal. And it was a huge deal. And I'll never forget Tony after that ball game, you know, because, you know, you talk about our journey as an organization of, you know, losing in 08 to Arizona, losing in 10 to Green Bay, who went on to win the Super Bowl, losing in 11 to New York, who went on to win the Super Bowl. You know, it was kind of that buildup. And Tony was in year, I want to say, 14 or 15 at this point, and had never won a playoff game.
Correct.
And for him to make that play, to be a part of it, Matt Bryant to make that kick going through after it, there was a lot of really cool, you know, pieces of that. And it was the first – that was the label, right? It was, yeah, you're a pretty good player, but you haven't won any playoff games. All right, so, okay, we can do it. We can come back and win a playoff game, you know, and then can you do more? And so that was really, you know, the start of it. But it's never going to be easy. That's the thing I remember, you know, about my career too, is that nothing is given. Nothing comes easily, right? You got to earn every part of it. It's hard to do, and that's why it makes making plays like that so rewarding.
Well, again, it harkens back to what you learned as a kid in your backyard.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Let's get the culmination if we can. Let's finish this one off. No, we were – do we have the field goal?
We didn't have the field goal. We just had the Green Bay.
So anyway, the field goal, and I was living vicariously through you, as was every fan that was in the Georgia Dome and all those who are watching at home, because Wes makes a great call as Matt kicks it through to win it. And I looked over at Wes and I said, Wes, why do we live this way? That was the comment.
It's organic. Perfect.
It was just – that was because we had been so – they've been so close. Why are we doing this to ourselves?
Yes.
But it was just a phenomenal moment that I think everybody – that will think back, and hopefully you guys enjoy this with Matt, that you'll feel what you felt at that time, because we all went, whew.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. We made it hard on ourselves in that game, to be, you know, frank.
Absolutely.
Too. But, you know, what's cool about that game, you know, now seeing it from hindsight, that Seattle team turned into – that was the beginning of that Legion of Boom and that Russell Wilson run. And you don't know – that's going to be one of the premier teams, you know, in the NFC for that stretch. That was really the very beginning of it, right? And for us to be toe-to-toe and then go out there and find a way to get it done, you know, it was special. It was super special.
Do you feel like, though, in 12, it's your team, you're already the, quote, face of the franchise? I think that term gets kind of loosely used sometimes when it's not applicable. But do you feel like, okay, I'm kind of directly responsible publicly for what this comes to be as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I probably felt that prior to 12.
Okay.
You know, I think that I always was cognizant of the fact that being a quarterback in the NFL, being the starting quarterback for one of these 32 franchises, there's a lot of weight that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And how you conduct yourself every day, right? The way that you work, the way that you are for your teammates. I never took that part of it lightly. I didn't take that for granted. And so I felt that weight constantly, you know, for 14 years. At times it was heavier than others.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for 14 years here, I always felt that weight. You know, I remember Mike Smith telling me, listen, man, wins and losses are attached to two people's names around here, yours and mine.
Wow.
You know, in year one. And so when you think about it, that really is his head coaching record is this. This quarterback's record is this. You don't hear it for a wide receiver. You don't hear it for,
that's a good point.
You know, an offensive lineman. But there's a weight that comes with it. The thing, I don't know why, and it's probably the way I was brought up and maybe just the way I am, I was always comfortable with that. You know what I mean? So it, to me, that was one of the reasons that allowed me to be successful, you know, for a long time was that, yes, I felt it. I knew it was there, and I was comfortable with that. I was okay, you know, being in that spot. And in fact, I really liked it. You know, I really liked that pressure. I liked that, you know, I felt like that brought the best out in me. So I probably felt that way prior to 2012, but I think my confidence was probably in a, you know, a career high up until that point during that 2012 season.
Well, there's not a lot of guys, and then we're talking about a select amount of guys. A lot of those guys are enshrined in Canton that can handle that kind of information. When you got a coach that comes to you and you're a 22-year-old kid and they say, hey, this is attached to you and me, you've got to be careful about information that you try to share with people because some guys are a little bit more fragile than others. That was never, ever fragile, and anything like those type of words was never associated with you. I always appreciated the toughness. Part of that toughness was your ability to line up every weekend. And I got a chance, like I said, see you three times a week and maybe more than that during the season. The times I knew you were beat up and couldn't, you probably shouldn't go. There were a number of times you shouldn't have played. And I know you know that.
Yeah.
Tell me about that and your mindset of needing to line up every time with your guys.
Well, I think it started I'll share this. So it starts from a young age. I remember my uncle was a quarterback at Boston College, John Lockery. Mm-hmm. And my uncle broke his thumb at BC. And Doug Flutie came in and became the quarterback at Boston College. And my uncle wasn't like bitter or anything about it, but you know, maybe a little bit. But
just a shy.
Maybe a little bit. But I remember hearing this story as a kid, right? And I don't know why, but it's the things I remember, right, you know, hearing growing up. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, if you could play through it, right? Don't let somebody go out there and take your spot. And so I remember then getting to Boston College. And so I kind of, it didn't happen quickly for me. It took some time. I had to work my way up and finally got a chance to play, you know, in my redshirt sophomore year to start in earnest. I took over the team halfway through. So then my junior year, I break my fifth metatarsal in my foot against Virginia Tech. And I finished the game. It was hurting, whatever. And I go in with the doctors and I'm like, okay, so what can you do for it? And they're like, well, nothing. It's a clean break right in half. We'll put a screw in it. And I was like, well, what happens if you play? And they were like, well, nothing really. It'll probably calcify around. We'll just re-break it and then put a screw in after the season. And I said, all right, that sounds good to me. Let's do that. But somewhere in the back of my mind, it was that I knew there was this kid, Chris Crane, who was behind me at Boston College, who was 6'4", 235, 240. He ran like a 4.5, 4.6, and he could throw it. And I was like, I'm not coming off the field. Like I'm probably screwed up in that way, but that was the way my mind worked, right? And so it was just this always, I can be out there, I can do it, I'll figure out a way to get it done. So then you get to the NFL, right? And you're gonna be playing through certain things. And I just felt, like I talked about, that weight of you know, wins and losses being attached to it. And I also think back to like, to whom much is given, much is expected. So I feel like I was given a lot and I was expected to do what I could to be out there and perform and try and help our team win. So I had many verbal confrontations with training staff and stuff like that. Like, nah, I'm playing, you know, yeah. We'll figure out a way. You know, I remember running in, I can't remember what I did, but Marty Lazone and Danny Long were in the training room. And I couldn't practice Wednesday. I probably didn't practice Thursday, but I woke up Friday morning. I was like, oh, this feels a little better. And I remember walking in to the training room. It's like 5:30. I'm the only one in there. And I yell at Marty and Danny. I'm like, don't change the mother effing game plan. I'm good to go. And they're like, what? You know, and but just that was it. You know, it was for me, it was I'm going to find a way to play no matter what. And I'm going to, you know, try and be out there if at all possible.
Yeah, there were special shoes. There were shoulder harnesses. Yeah. There were things on his back. I mean, it was unbelievable how many different ways they got this guy back on the field because he demanded to be on the field.
We get to 2016, Dan Quinn's second year. You have gone through a transition of GM and head coach. Dave, we were talking before we started this about the variety of offensive coordinators that you
have.
Five different OCs.
Yep.
You get to 16. You've had a year with DQ. You kind of know what the plan is. You've worked with Kyle for a year.
Mm-hmm.
It clicks in year two. A little bumpy in spots, but it clicks. Why? How?
I think you work through it, right? And so, you know, 2015, we started like 6-2.
5-0.
5-0. And then I'm thinking through that first half of the season, we were probably like 6-2, somewhere around there. And so we start out, but I even remember being like, I don't feel that comfortable though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like we're winning and this is great, but we're kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors. We're kind of. Because you know it, right? You know it as a player when you're really operating or you're kind of just – you're getting by. And I think we were all learning it. It was really different. It was really new. It wasn't just myself. It was collectively, right? We had guys that had been around for a long time and had been in the same system. We had different coordinators, but we had been in the same system for 7 years together. So there were so many little things, you know, that we kind of had to rewire our brains to operate differently. So I think it took us time. And then I think having really candid, honest conversations that off season too about, hey, I'm in, I'm all in, I'm good, you know, with where we're going, but we need a few things here and there too. And I think that mixing heading into the 2016 season was really good. And then in fact, I remember being 7-5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, I mean, it was a great year, but it wasn't like we were just railroading teams right from the start, right? Like
right,
it was – there
correct.
Was some back and forth and some hard.
Yeah, we had the Rocky loss to Kansas City here, remember?
Yeah, I do. threw a pick on a two-point conversion that went back for 2 points. You know, so there was some of that. We had a tough loss. I remember against the Chargers where we had a chance at the end.
Yeah.
We kind of came screaming back. We ended up losing. But none of them were blowouts.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was all that. It was tight. Mm-hmm. We were right there. We just need to tighten a few things up, and then boom. I mean, we got into a rhythm, and we started rolling, and we played, you know, some really good football, you know, down that stretch. And offensively, we were a problem.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it felt like every time we touched the ball, we were going to score a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't far off, you know. It really wasn't.
Set records for points that year.
Yeah, it was. It was a fun team to be a part of, and obviously, you know, a disappointment for sure. You know, but that's part of it.
We're gonna run one more play here. I know it's one of Dave and mine's favorite plays.
Absolutely.
You'd beaten Seattle the week before in the divisional round, and again, always somehow Seattle shows up in this thing, right?
Yeah.
But then you had to exercise one more demon, and Green Bay comes in here because they beat Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, they go and beat the top seed,
and
right?
You got to go back to 11 when they came in and beat us here.
On that Saturday night game.
They rolled us.
Yeah. So here's the NFC title game, and this is second quarter, plus territory, 7.5 minutes left to go.
Green Bay rushes four. Ryan steps up in the pocket. Matt Pumps runs 10, 5. Does he score? He does. A rushing touchdown for Matt Ryan. How bad does number 2 want it?
By the way, former Falcon staffer Michael Benford almost took one in the noggin on the spike.
Yeah, that was clocked at 103 miles an hour.
Yeah, that was the hardest I ever threw.
Well, it to me, it typified really you and your career.
Yeah.
It was a moment in time.
Yeah, it was, and I think, I mean, you talk about the celebration, and like what I think of when I see that you know, I think I was 31 years old at the time, right? Somewhere around there. I think that season, 30, 31, somewhere, somewhere around there. I started playing football in second grade, you know? So like, to me, that's, you're talking 20 some years of effort, of work, of, you know, to try and be in that position, to try and do it. And that's why, like, all of that stuff is coming out too. You know, all of the good, all of the people along the way, you know, that you were a part of, like, you feel all of that, you know? And honestly, I don't even know how to describe, like, what is running through your body, you know, at that time. But it's, this is the hard part, right? When it's over is, I love playing golf. I never feel like that playing golf. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or I get it.
You know, I think the nerves with kids become similar to where you feel the emotions that, that you have for them. Mm-hmm. And that part is really good or really cool. But like, that is the stuff that, that is hard to replicate, that, that, you know, you'll never get back. But like, I think that is a fair representation too. Like you said, like, I really love to play, and I really love to compete. And like, I think that is that coming out in those type of situations.
It was, to me, real quickly, in watching it, and that's why I said how bad is number two on it, is it was a collective feeling, not only for you, mm-hmm. and obviously huge moment for you and your career to get the monkey off your back, get to the big game, but the whole city was riding with you.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'll never forget. So, I mean, this game was unbelievable, but first half, we come out, we explode in the third quarter coming out too. We just did not take our foot off the gas the entire game. And we get to the end, and it's the only time in my life, you know, I've been on the field totally consumed with what was going on off the field and have goosebumps or whatever. I feel like my whole life, I didn't really, you don't even hear it, right? You don't even notice it. And that dome finishing up and that place chanting MVP and me trying to get it quiet because we're snapping it, like, to just run the clock out basically. And my skin's crawling off, you know, and I'm really shaking on the inside. I'll never forget it. Like, it was, I miss that dome, you know? I miss it for that reason, because, you know, you said it's, you know, 70,000 people in that thing and 5, 6, 7 million people in our city, you know, whatever the fan base is. And it's happening to me. And I was like, this is crazy. This is unbelievable.
I want to share a couple things. Well, first of all, I remember there are two things that happened that day that I remember specifically. Late in the game, we came out of a commercial break, and it's evident they're going to win the game. And Dave said, isn't it nice we can just tip our hat and walk up the 18th fairway here knowing that we're going to go someplace and play again? Because we've gone from why do we live like this to, you know, now we're going to doff our cap and walk up the 18th fairway. The second part of this, and I wanted to touch on this, and we were talking about this kind of as we were working through the process of talking to you today. There's some constants you've mentioned intermittently along the way. Two things I remember about that. One is you and Sarah after the game that captured by NFL Films.
Yeah.
And how proud, because she was a good athlete.
Oh, man.
Played women's basketball at Georgia Tech. Terrific in her own right. And how proud she was of you. And how much that meant to her that you got that done.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yeah.
And then after the game, your dad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. So
I saw your dad and I was just like,
I'll start with my dad. So, I mean, my dad is, I see him after the game, and the cool thing, you know, for, oh man, really the whole time at the dome, because the parking situation changed at Mercedes-Benz.
Yes, it did. Right.
And so the whole time at the dome, we had that parking lot that was underneath right outside of the locker room. And my dad and I would drive home from every game together. Nobody else. And so Sarah, you know, would leave. We'd all be going back to the house or whatever. She would, you know, have the rest of my family getting set up, whatever it is, right? But it was always my time with my dad for, you know, 20, 25, 30 minutes, whatever. And I, loved that, you know, and so that was a special, you know, mm-hmm. ride back with him. My dad, you know, is a little bit old school in that, you know, we weren't told, you know, how great we were all the time.
Sure.
You know, it was it was just a, you know, a different time. And this is, he certainly loved us and showed us that all the time. But, you know, it's just different. And so I remember that car ride back and him just being like, I'm really proud of you. And I'm like, damn, man, I have never heard that. Like, not, but I felt it.
No,
but,
right.
You know, it's just that generation is just very different, you know? And so, like,
Thrive, you wanted his approval. You wanted to please your dad.
100%. So I remember that, and I always knew that, but
sure,
absolutely. It was cool. It was cool on the ride home. And then Sarah, after the game, I have a picture of me leaning down and her kind of in that spot in the house. And I mean, I look excited, but
yeah,
my and the picture's like kind of from my, like how I remember it too. And it's just, you're exactly right. I mean, for my entire career, you know, she's the one person that got the honesty, you know, because Arch, you know this, showing up in the building every day as a quarterback, I mean, there are days when you don't have it, you don't feel good, but you better fake it. You better come in and you better, you know, be on it. You'd be a positive, upbeat, dialed in, all of those things. And then you kind of get in that car and you get home and you're like, this is disaster. This isn't good. You know, like I'm not, my body's messed up. He's not doing this. Or, you know, she caught all of it. You know, she caught all of it that frankly nobody else caught, you know. And you mentioned her being a great athlete. She's also like the best sports psychologist on the planet of knowing what to say or what not to say, just seemingly perfect, you know, forever. And so, I mean, I wouldn't have been the same player I was without her. I know that for sure. And the celebrations would not have been as fun as they were without the people that, like you mentioned, my dad and my wife, who were such a big part of it along the way.
Yeah, just I remember seeing your parents, and I talked to your pop. I don't care, was it home or on the road, wherever it was. He'd call me over. Hey, what do you think? I said, your kids got it, man. We're good. Like, it's the love and support that was there, both from your immediate family with your wife and with Sarah, and then your mom and dad, was so evident in it. And I know it meant a lot to you.
Oh man, it meant a ton. You know, you guys knew it. You know, I would talk to you after every game. I would see you, Wes, after every game.
Yep.
You know, particularly those road games. But my dad wouldn't even say much. You know, he's not a big talker. But he would be standing outside the locker room, win or lose, every game on the road. I mean, I think the guy missed, prior to COVID, like two or three games my entire career. And would be standing outside that locker room. And it was just, we didn't even really need to talk. You might get 2 minutes, you know, before we were heading to the bus. But that meant, you know, that meant the world to me.
Sure.
Just having that safe, whatever you want to call it, safe space or where you could let your guard down for 1 minute, talk about nothing, and you would finish with it, you good? And I'm like, I'm good, man. I'm good. And that was it. I mean, honestly, but for whatever reason, that was the thing that kind of, okay, all right, I'm back.
Centered.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's awesome.
Without creating a mini series of visits.
Yeah, sorry.
No. This is all good. We have talked since you played in Indianapolis and now gotten into television, and we'll get a final thought about that future. the commitment that you and Sarah, that you're making in this community. The thing, why Atlanta is now important to you, why it's home to you, why this is a valued piece of what you are as Matt Ryan. When did that start? I mean, I could say, sure, you played here 14 years. It's easy to understand, but there's a lot more to it than just putting the black helmet on and wearing number two now to what Matt Ryan and Atlanta are.
Yeah. I mean, that part is hard, right? In this profession, you really have no control over where you start.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. And so I always feel like I was so lucky that it was here. Not only for what happened in my career, but it's a great, I mean, you guys know it. It's a really good place to live. And I always felt like it was important to give back, you know, early in my career, whether that was with CHOA or, you know, Boys and Girls Clubs around the city, or later in my career, kind of starting this ATL Foundation,
yep,
to help kind of black kids in the west side of Atlanta. I think, you know, it was always important, but it really became home when my kids were born. Yeah. And, you know, you start to think about, like, and I still kind of scratch my head, like, my kids are from the South. What? what is going on? You know, like, we took them up. My wife is from Portland, Maine. And so we took them up to Maine this January. And there was, like, there wasn't even snow on the ground, just like, you know, where it's plowed off or whatever. And my kids are like, there's so much snow. Let's go sledding. And I'm like, you're sledding on grass. Like, what is wrong with you? They just don't know, you know. So we still kind of, you know, laugh and kind of pinch ourselves about that. But it really changed for us, you know, when my older two were born. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think about your life in a different way when the kids come. Where are, sure, we going to raise our children? This is a great place to raise our children. The people here have been incredibly kind to me and Sarah, you know, throughout our career and beyond. And so it's special. You know, I think we all want to, you know, be a beneficial part of the communities and try and make them, you know, better places. And that's what we're committed to trying to do.
All right. I got to ask you a couple just random questions.
Off is the this top, the rapid fire stuff?
This is the rapid fire.
This is going to be good.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Favorite city to play in other than Atlanta?
Green Bay.
Why Green Bay?
Lambeau.
Yeah.
I mean, I you can't even classify Green Bay as a city, but there is, to me, there is no other stadium like that. There's no other feeling like that in the NFL. I always loved playing up there.
I tell people all the time, I get asked that question, and Dave and I have done games there where it's been 4 and games when it's been 44 degrees.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the few places in the National Football League that has a pure collegiate feel to it.
100%. It feels different.
Yeah.
I think it feels different from any other place in the NFL.
I think anybody that's ever had a chance to be up there, just be in the building, but let alone play there. And I've been fortunate enough to be there as a player and as a broadcaster. And you're right, Matt. It's a different place. Least favorite place to go.
Come on.
Come on.
Is it Cam Jordan?
Is it Cam Jordan?
New Orleans.
Yeah, okay. Good. Just checking. Just wanted to reaffirm there.
ASAP per game.
Yeah, we just wanted to reaffirm it. You and Cam Jordan have had this rekindled relationship. I just want to make sure.
Listen, I like Cam. I know, you get to know players and this kind of stuff, and the competitiveness is there. But if I'm, you know.
Okay, just checking.
It was my favorite place to win.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to verify that because it was my least favorite place.
I remember one walk we had post-game there one time, and you were like slow strolling the entire field from the visitors' locker room. Yeah, I'm going to enjoy this walk right here.
It didn't happen very often, but when it did, it was good.
Can you, in your 234 career games starts, which every time you played you started, so 234 times – is there a favorite game all time?
Ooh,
Can you do that?
How about that question, huh?
I mean, yeah. I think the last clip we showed, you know, closing out that the Georgia Dome that way, that game, that was probably the most special. Followed by one that was
difficult,
but that one, yeah, for
which
sure.
Which is interesting about that game, and we have not talked about the Super Bowl, and it obviously didn't go the way we wanted it to go. By the way, Matt's the fourth highest rated passer in Super Bowl history.
Correct.
And you can take all the winners, all the fourth rated game all time in rating. Phil Simms just like 4 percentage points ahead. And Phil Simms went 22 of 25 in that 86 Super Bowl when they beat the Broncos. Just tells you how good a game Matt had that day. But I'm going to throw some numbers out at you. 46 game-winning drives, sixth all-time. 76 career 300-yard games, fourth all-time. 62,792 yards, seventh all time. 381 touchdown passes, ninth all time. When you hear those kind of numbers, what does that mean to you?
I mean, it's hard to. I don't really know. You know, I don't really know what to make of it. I think that I'm incredibly proud of it. Like, I still think of playing high school football at Penn Charter. And if I threw for 1,000 yards in a season and had 10 touchdown passes, that was like an unbelievable year,
right?
You know? And so from a perspective, you know, it's hard to gauge that. I mean, I feel like I never, you know, took the blinders off while I was playing. You know, I was always kind of aware because you're answering questions about that kind of stuff at different times, and you understand, you know, that things pile up and turn into something at the end. But I never worried about that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't why I played, you know, if I'm being honest. It's nice that all of those things happen, but it wasn't the reason, you know, I did any of those things. But now looking back on it from the lens where it's done, and like, I'm like, holy, like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know, I still think, like, how did it happen? Like, how did all those yards, how did all the touchdowns, you know, I know the work I put in, but it still feels like a dream, you know, to me in a lot of ways. And I know it isn't, like, it really happened, but still feels like a dream.
Well, I know that's why it happened. Okay, you can capsulize it because he's that guy.
Mm-hmm. He is that guy.
I guess. Well, thank you. Yeah.
Although I would question hanging around us and becoming a friend. Now you're decided to jump into this fray.
Colleague.
Yeah, colleague. Media colleague. Yeah, colleague. Yeah. Is that what you are now, a colleague?
Great. So I got introduced at something. I was out at Super Bowl this year, and I got introduced as an NFL analyst. And I was like, what?
Isn't it funny how we always tried to shy away from media.
NFL analyst. NFL analyst.
As good as a player as he was, he's probably going to be that and then some as an analyst.
Absolutely.
I mean, get ready, because Matt Ryan's going to be in your homes over the next several seasons as one of the best analysts. And you talk about a guy who can break the games down. You think he broke them down as a player? Wait till you hear him break them down as an analyst. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, honestly, I want to say it before we're done. You guys were a big part of it, too, along for every, you know, step of the way. And I appreciate having seen it from a different lens now and knowing how difficult it is to do what you guys do and how good you are to the players and to the coaches and respectful to the families and all those things. I really appreciate, you know, both of you, and I'm thankful that you guys were along for at least, you know, my portion of the journey, and it made me sound a lot better than I was. Had a lot of cool calls on there and different things like that, but you two are the best, and I really, you know, appreciate the time today and, you know, all you did for me in the 14 seasons here.
Appreciate you, man.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us on this special edition on the Atlanta Falcons Podcast Network.